is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, of course, for all your jobbing needs. We are
jobbing
Twitch for all your twabbing needs. I don't know. I don't know what Twitch
Twitching.
Is for. Kick, your favorite one, Justin. And of course, Instagram as well, which, as we were just talking about, Instagram is great because you never know when the posts are coming.
Right, this is probably getting served up to someone in 2027.
You know what is getting served up is the amazing show we have for you guys, and we wouldn't be able to do that show if it wasn't for the support of folks at patreon.com/comicbookclub. Now, you can get ad-free versions of this podcast, you can join our Discord, you can do a lot of other things, but once a month...
We started a book club that people come and then we all talk about comics together.
Oidas Larson.
Hold on, Pete. This is an actual thing that I had a lot of fun at.
Yes.
It's a little ridiculous that we were like, oh, we should have a book club for our comic book club for the first time in 20 years.
Finally paid off that name.
Super fun. We talked about Drome by Jesse Lonergan. It was only taped for Patreon supporters if they catch up later. This wasn't a podcast or anything. It was literally just like hanging out and talking about the book, you know, how a book club works. But
I buried a tape of it in my backyard that we unearthed. Disinter in
20 years.
Yeah, 50.
Oh, 50 years?
I think if you're time capsuling for 20 years, like, what are you doing? Just put it on a shelf.
I do a time capsule every 2 to 3 years, and I dig it up.
Really?
I'm like, wow.
That's a lot.
Ooh, what was 2022 like?
Let me find out. Oidas Larson.
Okay, Pete is giving
a lot of
deer. And that's great. I don't know, particularly because Pete, right before we got on, was like, I don't even want to read these names. I don't want to pay tribute to these people.
Oh, how dare you.
I don't like them. I don't support them. I wish they would.
That sounds like me. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You were like, I don't even want to refund their money. I want to keep their money. And
we have guests. We got to get to an amazing show.
He thinks Oidas Larson is a curse word, like Imperius Rex.
Yeah.
Well, like I was saying, at the $5 and up level at patreon.com/comicbookclub, we pay tribute. We read off the names once a month. So let's get to it with Oidas Larson.
Aaron C. Hollis.
Aaron Flo.
Adam DeRose.
Adam Henson.
Adam Marks.
Adriel Moreland.
Lana Fontenot.
Andrew Primo.
Andrew Tilden.
Estevarez.
Beer Cat, PhD.
Bradley Hansen.
Cameron Schrader.
Carrie Matthews.
Chet Post.
Chen Smale.
Christina Jaramillo.
Christina Rensfield.
Chris Terralizzi.
Clemens Luer.
Corey Cicherry.
Corey Smoker.
Dakota Gade.
Dan Snow.
That's all. It's Daniel Cabral.
Daniel Fuentes.
Danny Heck.
Darren Tupats.
David McKay.
Dennis Scott.
Which way? Doug Sataway.
Doug W.
Dylan L.J.
Eduardo Martinez.
Emmett M.
Enrique Chumbes.
Gary Meyer.
Gerard DeVillier.
Ian Ray.
Why? Jack Fry.
Oh, James Connolly.
Jaron Townsend.
Jason Donahue.
Jeffrey Whaley.
Joe Benton.
John Henderson.
John Manuel.
Jonathan Jong.
Joshua W. Broxson.
Joshua Wiggler.
Kevin Kleinrock.
Kieran Broderick.
Lance Kaminsky.
Luana Thomas.
Leah Hunt.
Luke Asink.
Mad Max Pliskin.
So nice, it's Matt Tice.
Matthew DePalma.
Matthew Schofield.
Ratting out the Matthew block with Matthew Taylor.
Routed out the Max block with Max Baker.
Michael McAuliffe.
Michael Tillman.
Nathan Hall.
Nelson Kelso Martinez.
Nick G.
Nick Grayson.
Official CBC chef. Stray Bullies, a.k.a. Brett Macris.
And we do charge him by the word there. Omnia Soul Art.
Orin Dix.
Orlando Kelly Jr.
Pedro A. Rangel.
Provocative Ambulance.
Rev Mikey.
Robert Pettinato.
Roxanne Tyler.
Russ Bowling Game.
Sam Lim.
Sarah Schottmuller.
Saunter.
Scott Carpenter.
Scott England.
Severin.
Stanley.
Steve Cook.
Steve Hunsberg.
Taylor Bryan.
The Big Flood.
The 12 Bench.
Tim Bubb.
Tom.
Victor Perez.
Will Buchanan.
Will Diaz.
W.M. Leach,
Zachary Bachman,
and Zika's Viral Comics. Thank you all so much for your support. We sincerely could not do the show without you.
We
so
couldn't start the so show much. This way without your names.
That's true. And if Pete had his way, we wouldn't do it at all.
Oh, know, my God. What a liar. Your pants are on fire.
I'll play the tape from right before the show because I record everything we say.
Even Alex records everything secretly. Like a little
that's
sneak.
Illegal.
No. I asked your permission not. 18 years ago, so we're good.
Yeah. We signed some which, fucked up forms.
Really did. I'm sorry. I got you guys. I don't even want to get into the stuff with your blood. All right. We have some great guests for you this evening. Why don't we kick it off with two of the folks behind the new Space Age from Mad Cave Studios, which is on sale on December 17th. Ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Porter and Mike Becker, welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Hello. How's it going, guys?
How are you?
What's up? Hey.
Excited to have you here. Thank you for bearing with us with reading all of those names. And
if you have some names you'd like to say, go ahead.
Yeah, this is
only
the
if I can do it. Yeah, only if I can do it in the SNL voice of like Alex Zelbin, Justin, really good.
Come on down,
musical guest Fish.
That's gonna be a long
show. Long jams.
Excited about this book. This is very fun. Like I said, it's coming out on December 17th, which I want to say is next week. Next week. I'm losing all track of time.
Wow.
We're in the liminal space of December. Nothing counts anymore. But this book is the short version, and tell me what I'm missing in terms of the pitch. But basically, all space programs get shut down due to an event that you get to see in the first issue. There is a member, an astronaut for the space program, who has been trying to find his brother who went missing years earlier, and he discovers there may be a way of doing that involving crop circles. There's a lot more stuff that gets involved. There's a little bit from reading the first two issues. I'd say there's like a little bit of a sense of like a heist. I mean, it's not a heist, but it's kind of like we're building a team to do this thing, which is very, I love that format. I'm a sucker for it. But what are we missing there? What should we say about this book otherwise? Kenny?
I think you've got a lot of it. Yeah, it's about a disgraced astronaut who essentially discovers that crop circles are the secret instructions for space travel via magic, actually, that explains why in this world, or just from what we've perceived of whatever UFOs or UAPs may be, they seem to move against the laws of physics. So it was just a cool idea of like, oh, what if it isn't science that moves these things? What if it's magic? And what if crop circles, since they're similar to like magic runes you would see in fantasy and everything, what if that was instructions for space travel? So it's a big, like, hopeful science fiction story with a lot of heart. I've said a lot recently that, like, I love all types of sci-fi, big action stuff, dystopian horror, but we haven't had like a lot of hopeful science fiction in a while. And I wanted to do something similar in the vein of like DC's New Frontier or movies like The Explorers or Flight of the Navigator, like those old fun like 80s space movies. There was a hopeful kind of story about exploration and not just magic in terms of casting spells, but like the magic of space travel and exploration we haven't talked about in a while.
I want to jump in there because I feel like in a time where everyone is sort of combining genres where it's like vampires, but football, they have to suck footballs dry. Got it. That's my book. This feels like such
sick
a
pitch, bro.
Pretty good, right? That's just an idea. Football vampires. That's the title. This feels like such a considered genre blend. How did you develop this? This feels like it sat on your brain for a while.
Yeah, it was actually honestly pretty quick, similar to football vampires. There was a ton of footage of UFOs and stuff released lately, so it was like in the zeitgeist. Yeah. I was thinking about it. And then also when Unsolved Mysteries came back and did that new season, the UFO episode was actually about my hometown.
It happened
around my hometown, around like Grand Haven, Muskegon, Holland, Michigan, about this huge UFO sighting that was well documented. And of course, all these Midwest people were very politely calling the police, being like, I just want you to know there's a UFO outside. So I don't, if everybody needs to watch out. Like that was in my mind, and I started, like I said, thinking about how they move, and I'm a big fan of stories about magic and stuff. I decided to blend the two, and from there it really became like I have a cool concept, like what's the emotional crux of the story, and I started to think about, you know, being a kid and having that hopeful sort of feeling about, you know, space travel or science or that big sort of thing. And that kind of blended into a story about brothers and survivor's guilt and everything. So while it is a big hopeful story, there is a like a very traumatic emotional story built into it as well that the characters are working with.
Yeah, the layers of it is really nice. I mean, first off, I love the vibe, the look, the color, the art is fantastic. But yeah, you know, it's this cool kind of UFO idea with magic where I'm like, oh, creative, cool. But then also the hook of like, after the first issue, I'm like, oh man, I want to see if this guy saves his brother. This is awesome. So like, I love the kind of like stacking the different kind of things on top. It works really well and fits into this kind of cool idea that you've really crystallized. I just realized I went on a rant and didn't ask you a question, but great work. I love it.
It was a very positive rant.
Just put a question mark at the end. Great work.
Yes. Yeah. Thank
you. The answer is yes.
Maybe don't make that face. I don't know. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for the enthusiastic words, because it means a lot to us, because we've been working on this for a while. So to finally hear other people get excited about it, where it's not just Mike and I on the phone of like, isn't this so much fun for like, since we can't see the forest for the trees, it's nice to hear that. But speaking of visual stuff, like I really love what Mike's done with it. And Mike, if you could talk a little bit about how you developed the visual identity of the book, I think people would probably love to hear that.
Oh yeah. Also, thank you for the kind words. Like Kenny said, we've been kind of creating in a vacuum for a long time.
So best place to create.
Can be. It feels like Kenny said, kind of the can't discern the forest from the trees. So there are times in the middle of the process where it's like, does this look like anything? Does this make sense? But in terms of the visual identity, I definitely used a lot of sci-fi touchstones just to kind of add like a launch point. I think we really, from the beginning, wanted this DC New Frontier style hopeful future. But it's not too distant in the future, and it's really not utopian. It's just like a couple of years down the way, how has technology developed a little bit. So a lot of the style I developed, I used by kind of looking at some retro sci-fi stuff to pull from like 50s sci-fi art, a lot of pulp sci-fi, to kind of capture this like nostalgia cycle of where, you know, we had our 1950s, and if in the 2050s where the story is set, maybe some of these things have kind of come back in a fashion. Sure. I looked at a lot of like Googie style architecture, or that mid-century modern kind of shapes, Jetsons style aesthetics, for just kind of that shape language that informs some of the fashion of the characters and some of the locations. I had to design a lot of spaceships. There's several, like many spaceships and vehicles, which was a little out of my wheelhouse, but was really good exercise in learning. Just you have to kind of draw anything. And I kind of forced myself to learn how to draw vehicles, and definitely came up with some pretty unique spacecrafts deeper into the story.
Well, how do you tackle that then? Just to keep talking about the vehicles a little bit, because like you said, from the first two issues, we get a sense of that. Presumably there's going to be more as the series goes on. So do you build a 3D model and work off of that to figure it out? Do you're just doing loose sketches or somewhere in between?
I'm not going as far as to make 3D models. Okay. I develop everything just pencil, paper, sketches. Some of the machines I don't want to talk about too much yet, just because they show up later on. For example, in the first issue, one of the first things we see is he's driving essentially a space truck. That was pretty easy. Just kind of throw some wings on a truck. Then deeper on, there's some like medical equipment. So I looked at some like ambulances or other sci-fi hospital looking devices or vehicles. For the actual ships themselves, a lot of the design I came up with was inspired by some of the crop circle rune language that we developed.
Yeah.
That's kind of what the magic system in the book is. The ships became kind of a 3D manifestation of some of those ships. So that's why they're very, when you see them, that's why they look the way they do.
Not to get super granular on it, but like, how do you actually, like, do you have like a punch list of like, okay, I need this type of spaceship, this space truck, and are you just rabbit holing your way through the internet to finally get to what you feel like you need?
Or I guess I start with kind of a design pass on the script. I usually read each script three times. The first time, just to get the story, I'm not really taking notes. I'm just reading it. Then the second time, that's my design pass, where I kind of identify what characters I need to design.
Oh, cool.
They're new characters, crowd scenes, locations, and stuff like vehicles. That just, what am I going to have to draw? And in that pass, I also kind of rank the pages. I call them A, B, or C pages.
This is going to be a problem. This one.
It's the set piece or the challenge, a splash page or like a big reveal, double page spread. Those are going to be the A pages where I have to really bring it. And the B pages are probably very like plot focused, or also probably kind of got to bring it, but it's not like that. The huge like set piece of the whole 22-page story or 20-page story.
And the C pages are the one that, as they're going to the printer, you're still kind of sketching as they go right into the press.
There really are no throwaway pages, because everything, in comics, it's the real estate is just so limited. So they all matter, but they're just the ones that are maybe just more conversation focused.
Right. And do you do the A's first, or how do you tackle
it? Or last, yeah.
I am a psycho, and I just do everything incredibly chronologically. Like,
That's so interesting. You just want to know how hard your bumps are.
The whole script three-dimensionally to figure out what I have to draw. And then on the third pass, that's when I'm doing the thumbnails, and I'm probably taking some notes or like doing little panel layouts, especially if the script itself inspires or calls for something specific, which is pretty rare. But I'll do that on more of the third pass, where I'm like, okay, panel one, it's this. Panel two, this is how much dialogue is in there. So that's kind of my process, translating the script into pictures. And then design-wise, I just kind of hit each one as I go. I'll do a lot of sketches at the beginning for some of the big picture stuff. So that's a lot of my process.
Before we go any further, I did want to mention we have a really pushy guy in the comments over on YouTube who's forcing you to read this. No, I'm kidding. Once every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans. You might have heard his name at the beginning, Brent Macris, a.k.a. Straight Bullet. He works at a restaurant called Shift, actually manages a restaurant called Shift down in New Orleans. That's fantastic. Go there if you happen to be in New Orleans, but he either creates or curates a cocktail for us. This week he created This Crop Circle Is Telling Me Something. Based on your book, it is rye whiskey, amaro, honey syrup, lemon juice, absinthe, Angostura bitters. Am I mispronouncing that?
No, that's right.
I got it. Okay. And a lemon wedge. So there you go. If you're looking to tackle the space race, this is the perfect cocktail for you.
Yeah, this is the fuel of the space race. I'm drinking it minus the absinthe.
Is it good?
It's too bad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want one real bad. My absinthe, my black market absinthe supplier is running late.
Weird.
Really weird.
Well, there you go. I'll send that to you guys after the show. Just want to show it to you.
Cool.
But Kenny, over to you in terms of your process. Do you have A, B, and C pages as well? Or how are you tackling it?
Yeah, I rank it A, B, and C of how much I'm going to screw Mike. I just draw a big A over every single page. He gets like upgrading papers. Process-wise, I've kind of gone more analog, and I've gone back to like paper and pencil for a lot of stuff, just because I think it gives me a better, like a 1.5 draft by the time I get to typing it, because I've already kind of thought about it a little bit more. I'm going slower. I can type really fast, but it necessarily I shouldn't write that fast. So I found that like writing in a notebook first really helps me think about what's on the page. I do a lot more edits and stuff that way. And then usually I'll break it out into sequences and then break those out into pages and everything. And before we worked together, we made sure to have like a good, like long phone call to talk about what the vibe of the book was going to be, what the real heart of it was, some of the touchstones, the things that we really liked. I think that phone call was like super important for us locking down what the process was going to be like from scripting to art. And then the whole vibe and flavor of the book to make sure we were on the same page and had kind of the same thought about influences going in.
You, like you've mentioned, are dealing very heavily with crop circles. I'm curious, both from the design standpoint, but also from the writing standpoint, are these real crop circles, and what are your take on them?
So I'll start, and then Mike could jump in here. So I just gave some examples early on of what they could look like, and then we talked about what they would look like in our world, because obviously, like, in this world, unlike the real world, they're a completely different thing for a different purpose. And from what I understand, I was kind of, I'm going to be completely honest, I was kind of a jerk about it, because I would just be like, draw a symbol that means this. and I wouldn't give any direction. Besides
that is kind of jerky. I mean, come on, help him out a little bit.
It's a little bit of just trusting him to knowing that he would.
That's a good way of saying it. Yeah.
Yes. I trusted Mike that if I was like, okay, we're going to need a symbol that means this, that we're going to put on the control panel that they're messing with. Because in the first two issues, there's a lot of experimentation and a lot of building stuff from scratch, which leans into that heist sort of thing you were talking about, which I really enjoy, of like the getting the team together and getting all the materials and testing stuff. And Mike developed a whole like key of what the different symbols mean.
So you're pretty into the dark arts at this point, Mike, just conjuring some weird runic shit.
Yes. Definitely explored some of that thematic stuff. Kind of even going into this project, I was already pretty familiar with a lot of this stuff that I kind of discovered through comics. So this project, when it kind of came to me leading into the phone call Kenny mentioned, I was already really on board with a lot of the crop circle, occult, like sigil stuff. So it was pretty natural fit for me and kind of exciting to get to explore and put my own take on some of that stuff. But I did develop like a whole little alien language that they translate.
Wow.
That's what they use in the story to, you know, kind of cast their spells or power their ships, which is really how it manifests.
Well,
their kind of keyboard.
That's amazing. I can't wait for a couple of years in the future when we use that to decipher real alien language. It's going to be great, man.
Yeah.
Let's help. Yeah. Could be here sooner than we think.
So obviously we've read ahead, but since most people have not, and this is coming out next week, what do you want to, obviously we've been teasing it all along, but what do you want to tease about the book? What do you want to tell folks to get them to check it out?
Yeah. So coming up, I'll say that, like you said, first issue's hitting next week. That's going to get us off the ground running. You're going to get a lot of the setup. It goes way crazier, even from what you guys have seen in the ahead stuff of like when we get more into, like, spoiler alert, they're building a spaceship. They're going to go to space.
yeah.
Like, when they go to space, I one of the reasons I loved Mike for the project was because, aside from, like, a very cool – he has a lot of experience in animation, and you can tell that in his pages. Yes. In the sci-fi stuff, there's a lot of influence. I love, like, Franco-Belgian, like, Mobius-type stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We get real, like, crazy in the space pages when we get
awesome.
With things. And it gets very, like – Metal Herlant, Mobius sort of stuff later on. So I'm very excited for people to see how weird it gets and to see how Mark is going to deal with the drive to saving his brother. Because while it's a good, you know, emotional and justified drive, that might get him into some trouble.
Oh, boy.
It feels like Joey. And I just want to, while you're talking about references, this, if you're a fan of like early Umbrella Academy, I feel like this is a book for you. I really like that. That was catching that vibe and that sort of like creative push from that book.
I would say like it gave me a little like Fear Agent, but like not mean or heartbreaking. Well, warmer Fear Agent gives you hope, you know?
Yeah, it reminded me of Fast and the Furious because.
But in space?
Heist, but in
Are you
space.
Saying. Or football vampires, Alex?
Football. Football vampires. I always mispronounce that as Fast and the Furious. I'm so sorry, Justin.
Well, that's part of it, too. It's included in that. Page.
Yeah. They say football vampires in the book, but everybody's like, Fast and the Furious? It's a bit. It's a good bit. What?
Holy shit. All right. Let's
love
go.
It when bits come to life. That's awesome.
Yeah, just for anybody listening to the podcast later, Mike drew a football vampire while we were sitting here.
Mike and I just made $1 million.
That's amazing.
I was just waiting for it to come up again.
That's so funny. You knew it would. I love the trust.
Guys, the book is great. Congratulations on it. I'm excited to see it go crazy
it's awesome.
Down
Can't
the
wait.
Road. And thank you for coming on.
Yeah, really enjoyed the book, guys. So good.
Thanks.
Thanks for letting us get the first two.
All right. There we go. Once again, the book is called The New Space Age. It's coming out from Mad Cave Studios on December 17th. Thank you to Kenny and Mike for coming on and talking about it. Book is a ton of fun. Definitely.
Yeah, it really is. Hits the ground running, too.
Yes.
It definitely does.
If you're an HVAC technician and a call comes in, Grainger knows that you need a partner that helps you find the right product fast and hassle-free. And you know that when the first problem of the day is a clanking blower motor, there's no need to break a sweat. With Grainger's easy-to-use website and product details, you're confident you'll soon have everything humming right along. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And speaking of hitting the ground running, we're going to hit the ground running with another guest. I'm very excited to have him back on the show. He is the creator behind Oni Press's Crownsville. The second issue of that is on sale tomorrow from Oni Press. And it also is phenomenal. Ladies and gentlemen, Rodney Barnes.
Rodney, welcome.
How
are you?
Guys? I'm doing okay. I've been working on this football vampires thing. Taking up a good portion of my life. So
I can't really talk about it right now.
But it's a great idea.
It always happens.
Really excited.
I was thinking you could tie it into the Tom Brady Deflategate thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of angles.
Get out of the pool, Pete.
We're all swimming, right?
Come on. There's this quarterback named Tom, and he's immortal, and he's playing until he's like 100.
He's clearly a vampire.
He's clearly a vampire.
Rodney, honestly, when you say it, it sounds much more real than what I did. So I feel like we're really actually moving forward here.
I'm a pro. So,
yeah, exactly.
That's true.
You are a pro, and that comes through in Crownsville. Like I said, the second issue is coming out soon. We've read both the issues so far, and they're fantastic. And this is, I feel like we talked to you about this a while ago. I don't remember. Yeah. But just for anybody who hasn't been checking it out, this is somewhat based on the real Crownsville Hospital in Annapolis, Maryland. Am I getting the location right?
Yes.
But it takes place in the present day as a detective is investigating some weird goings on there that do tie back to all the disturbing, terrible, real-life things that happen. And just to kind of start off, I feel like we asked you this question last time, but I'm curious just to, for new listeners to hear your answer. Mm-hmm. Like, when you're dealing with something that is real horror like that, like what happened at Crownsville, how do you make sure to responsibly work that into fiction, like I think you are doing in this comic book?
It's a fine line. I mean, I think that you deal with it from a historical place where you don't put any like personal agendas across. I do my best to tell the stories, and I allow the characters themselves to feel what they feel. Like, if you could imagine yourself being in a haunted house, I try to place it more like that. And any of the end quote social commentary really comes about by how it makes the characters feel, not so much me. So it becomes more of a human story than it is more of something that I'm telling from the outside in.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, you really feel alongside the characters. And one thing that I think keeps it from getting caught up in any, like, really sort of looking at the real life of it is how you have such an ensemble here and you're jumping between their sort of story points. Like, but that also feels challenging to do as you're hitting one issue from all these different angles.
It is. But, you know, the characters, as you mentioned, they have their own personal stuff going on. So it's a great place to be able to depart the main story and the part that could be exploitive and kind of narrow in and focus on this place and what's happening in it and the pain that's under it sort of affects characters that are already going through their own thing anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is there's like beautiful, powerful panels in here. The art's fantastic. It's heartbreaking, this story. Was it something that, like, you found out about it and then were like, oh, man, I want to turn this into a comic? Because it's just, it works. Nope. It's so powerful in comic form.
Thank you. No, my grandmother worked there when I was a kid.
Oh, and, wow.
I had family members that were patients there. And probably about 6 or 7 years ago, I started to go back to the place and just out of curiosity, because it's been condemned for a while. And one night I go out there and the security guard shoos me away. I'm going to call the cops. You know, what are you doing here? Blah, blah, blah. And I was going and taking pictures and just to kind of, you know, work on an idea.
Right.
And then when she, as people do, as she's yelling at me and threatening me, and I'm telling her, you know, I'm thinking about doing a story and blah, blah, blah. She Googles me. And as she Googles me and she figures out that I, you know, I write television and all of this other stuff.
You're a pro. It works again. It always works.
It turns. She does a complete 180 and she starts to tell me about.
Now she's giving you a tour and stuff.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. She's telling me about things that go bump in the night there.
Oh, wow.
And then all the security guards that are on staff, they all kind of pull up and they go, that building there. That people come out and scream at 2 a.m. Oh, and if you want to hang around and this thing, we saw this and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, it becomes this, they become excited just about the possibility.
Yeah. Everyone has a fucked up story who works in a place like that.
Yes.
And, I'm sure they want to tell you.
And they do. And so that was sort of what was under it. And then I kind of had the green light to come there anytime I wanted to.
Well, I would have just ran away. That would have freaked me out so much.
Yeah, I didn't go too far from my car. I was always near my car.
Smart. Well,
to get back to Pete's question, though, so you go there, you're poking around, you're sort of reconnecting with your family history, you get all these guards telling you all this stuff. When does it transition into being a comic book?
I thought about doing a novel at first. Mm-hmm. And I have a friend, Antonia Hilton, who's on MSNBC, and she did an actual nonfiction study of the place, like spanning the 100 or so years that it was in existence. And there's like 1,100 or so unmarked graves on the property. Mm. And that's why I think it's hard for them to actually do something else with it, because their bodies everywhere.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if you... You give me enough time and you give me enough space to be able to think. I come up with a story and an entry point. And all I really need is an entry point to something that's human and personal. And it was right around when my mom passed that I started thinking about regret and certain things. And I was like, well, why not sort of incorporate how I'm feeling right now into this story that's so personal to the area? And the two were kind of mixed together and intertwined.
It struck me, especially in the second issue that comes out tomorrow, how it's almost seamless going from the real life horror and just the investigation the characters are undertaking into the supernatural. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like in a lot of books, it's much more of a like dun 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 moment when it's like a strange thing has just happened. But you made the choice to have the characters be like, yep, let's follow this ghost a little bit. So, can you talk about that? Like,
it felt it like so. One, you know, I think. I personally prefer stories, you know, kind of like Poltergeist. She turns on TV and TV sucks her up and we're there. You know, you don't need a whole lot of what brand TV was it was, you know.
Yeah.
I know they were living on top of a burial, you know, on an Indian burial ground or something, or a cemetery, a graveyard or something. But it didn't take long to get from A to B. And I wanted to get from A to B so that I could speak more about some of the history, some of the experiments, some of the things that didn't happen that were surreal, but kind of walk with things that did happen. And because there's a lot of real estate and a lot of characters to cover, you know, you really don't want to go through a bunch of exposition and learning about people and waiting for something to happen. I wanted to just jump and dive right in and get going.
The book is really lovely to look at, too. And I know that's not exactly your department, but Elia Bonetti's art is absolutely gorgeous and really complements the story well.
Yeah.
What's it like working with the artist on this
book? Elia's fantastic. You know, I met him. We actually had finished a book before I met him, because now virtually everything is email, you know, certainly for people who live outside of the country. But I met him at New York Comic Con. He actually gave me a couple of pages, original art, which is one of the best parts of being a writer in this thing. And I just thought his work was fantastic. Jason Sean Alexander, my frequent collaborator, introduced us. And I wanted a feeling that was more ethereal and different than what we do in Killadelphia and some of the other things that we Blackula, some of the other stuff we work on. And I just felt like his tone was perfect. And the soft colors, you know, I thought the muted colors between the pinks and the greens sort of lent themselves to feeling like a mystery ghost story. Like there was a feeling that was there before you actually read a word. And I wanted that. I wanted that feeling because it, you know, art, really the, you know, writers get a lot of credit, but I think the art is the thing that keeps a book moving. It's a lot of, when people see a cover, when people open up and they see the art, that's the first thing they see before. If they don't invest in that, they won't invest in the story. They won't take the time to sit down and read if it's not appealing in some way. And I just think, you know, he's the star. Ellie's the star of the book.
Well, like you're saying, and again, I know this is not necessarily your department, but the thing that I think is really lovely about it is the way that the wash is on the page. It almost looks, it feels like there should be paint peeling off of it, or it looks like an old painting that's been on the wall and is a little dusty on the bottom. So it complements it very nicely, I guess.
Yeah, it looks like a place that's condemned. You know, it looks like the place is really condemned.
Yeah. Since it is something that is so tied to your family history and you researched it so heavily, was there anything in the process of specifically making the comic that surprised you, something that you found out that you weren't expecting?
I think really between reading Antonia's book and going through all of this research, my level of empathy, you know, a lot of times when a place is standing for a long time, like a place is just in the background of your life, you hear about it, it's there, and then it closes. I don't think I realized the magnitude of the suffering and the nature for like 100 years, what this place represented and all of the pivots in history that it had to endure. I wanted to sort of in some way speak to marinate that in the story some way, that the story was bigger than actually these two guys that are trying to investigate what happened to the security guard and all of the things that were tangible. I wanted to not necessarily depart from it because that's the purpose that is there, but I wanted to be able to have them fall into a story and fall into something bigger than the thing that originally got them there.
Wow. Do you feel like, not to ask something too personal, but do you feel like you've gotten any closure on your personal family history from doing this book? Or do you feel like maybe it has raised more questions that you'd want to explore further?
No, I think it's a good thing. I mean, in a lot of the stuff that I do, it's cathartic. I think the things that I write best are things that are emotionally connected to me in some way, shape, or form. I see myself in them some way. And that doesn't necessarily have to just mean culture or anything like that, but oftentimes, like things about myself that I wrestle with, insecurities, regrets, those types of things. If I can speak to those things and it comes from a cathartic place, I think it connects to, hopefully, it connects to the reader and they can see the humanity in it, or at least the attempt at touching something that's empathetic and not just entertainment.
You spend a lot of time in your work, both through this book and then also Killadelphi, while, like you were mentioning, as well as your podcast and other things with the supernatural. Mm-hmm. What, this is a very broad question, but what draws you to it? What makes you interested in that in particular?
That's easy. When I was a kid, you know, I'm only child, watching the Universal Monsters and the Hammer films and, you know, growing up on that stuff and growing up with 70s horror and Dawn of the Dead and Howling and all of that great stuff. For a lonely kid, those things became like friends. Like, you know, I probably really would be a serial killer if I didn't have some place to put my imagination. You know, I would be probably one of the vampire football players if I didn't have some place to put my imagination. And in a lot of ways, it saved me in a lot of ways. So now as an adult, and, you know, I started writing comics, A, because I love them and they've been a part of my life. But B, I wanted a writing exercise that didn't require writing a movie or a TV show, because so many of those things are linked to business. I wanted that romantic idea of being a writer that I had way back when, where I could just write something that was fun, that was personal to me, didn't have a lot of notes, but just like, you know, 20 pages or so of something that was personal. And, you know, now I do that on a regular basis. I probably write too many of these things right now. But it is like a cathartic exercise. It's like a form of therapy to just be able to sit down and, you know, in some ways connect with people. You know, comics are their own culture. You know, it's not like when they were on the spinner racks in every convenience store and liquor store when I was growing up as a kid. Now you've got to actually go out of your comfort zone to find a comic shop and, you know, they're not as easy. They're not as accessible. They don't cost. They're not a quarter anymore, 20 cents. Yeah. They're not just disposable entertainment. So being able to still be a part of it, you know, as life moves on, is a great honor. I love them.
Has any of your family members read the book, and have they? What have they?
My community has. I did a signing at Third Eye Comics in Annapolis, shout out to Steve and staff at Third Eye, and a lot of people were walking up to me, thanking me for doing the book, and they remember the place. And I drive by there every day, and I never knew this was there, or they knew. And a lot of the people that were in my grandmother's time, they've passed on, but their children remember the stories. And, you know, some of the older people remember the stories. And, you know, it's, you know, history is in a weird place right now with what's talked about and what's not. And sometimes from a macro place and not so much nuance and specificity. So being able to speak to it in a way that's not medicine and is still entertainment, you know, I think is a virtue. I think it's a good thing. So, yeah, all thumbs up all the way around.
Well, just to echo what they were saying to you, thank you so much for making this book. It really blew my mind and was really not only beautiful but powerful to read.
Oh, thank you, man. But again, for the last time, when you read Vampire Football Players,
that's good.
In the huddle, the things that happened in the huddle alone, you know, that's the first issue.
All huddle issue.
Huddle issue, you know, it's 30 seconds you're supposed to be in the huddle, and they're there for 100 years.
Spoilers. But it's only 30 seconds to the people in the stadium.
Because then we go out in the stands, and I don't want to give it away.
Oh, man. It keeps getting better.
Well, it's a long series. There's a lot of stuff to spoil.
Long series.
Yes. This one is not necessarily long. I believe it's 5 issues. Is that correct?
It is. It's 5 issues. I think Oni did a great job with how they've marketed it so far. And the first issue was the double issue. And it's 5 issues. I've finished writing it all. So we should be on time and everything should be good.
Awesome. And before we let you go, I know you're a busy guy. Anything else you want to plug? Anything else I think people should check out?
30 Days of Night. I think the second issue is on its way or should be on stands. I don't follow it as well as I should with when things come out. I think Han Solo, Hunt for the Falcon, number 3 or 4 should be out today.
Awesome.
So, yeah, there's some stuff out there. There's some stuff out there.
Awesome. Rodney, thank you so much. A pleasure chatting. Congrats on the book. It's great.
Of course. Such look forward to talk to you guys again.
Of course. Anytime.
Thank you.
All right. I cut him off. Regardless, check out Crownsville number 2. Also, check out Crownsville number 1. It's a great setup for the second issue.
It really is. It goes in order. It's impressive.
Really saying it like it is.
That is out from, but Crownsville number 2 is out from OD Press tomorrow. So check it out. And folks, we are going to move on with our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments and we, you're not going to believe this, will answer it. It's pretty crazy. It's a new thing.
Guaranteed. Yeah, it's really good.
No, boy.
Always a problem when Pete and I go for the same reference. Justin, you are drinking tonight's drink.
Was. Very good. That's how good it is. Just a cube at this point.
Just a cube.
Don't worry, but I'm drinking Pete's local beer, Yingling.
All right. Hey.
And Pete, what about you?
Oh, man, I don't have a garage, but I got the beer. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, nice.
Wow. Look at you back up in the comic attic. That means it's like a Canada goose flying south for the winter.
Yeah, I got too excited last time. We got to, you know, I got to lay off the microphone. You know what I mean? Apologies to the people listening if I got too close, too loud.
You were running a little hot last week. It's okay.
I was
like
fired
I said,
up. I was excited to be back in my attic.
You got excited.
Yep.
It's fine. It's a positive thing, except for listeners.
Except for, I shouldn't punish the listeners.
It's really positive, except for everyone here who's listening, including us, your co-hosts. I'm listener number 1, along with Alex.
Yep. Every week, I love listening to the show. That's what we're doing right now. Nat Towson asked, do you have any comics or nerd-related holiday traditions? Great question.
Sort of. I think 2 things come to mind. Like when we put together our best comics of the year and best graphic novels, that is like my time to pick up, especially graphic novels that I'm mm-hmm. like, oh, I have been meaning to buy this and just haven't yet. So that's sort of my time. And also starting in like a week is when I can actually sit down and read more really? Outside of our stack and everything. Yeah, I feel like holidays is when I can really catch up.
You can unwind and just catch up on some reading.
Well, I have reader's guilt, so I don't know. I'm not relaxing, but I'm just getting that grind back on.
Interesting.
I don't know if this is nerdy necessarily. I think it probably is. But on New Year's Eve, we always get a new puzzle, and we do a puzzle leading up to New Year's. Just hang out.
That's certainly nerdy.
Yeah, there you go. And it usually is like a Marvel puzzle or something. So, yes.
What's your piece count?
Usually try to go for, if it's New Year's, like 1,000, because it's not too bad for the kids. You can complete it in a couple of hours. It's, you know, it's mad.
Hours? Wow, race.
Yeah. Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. Pete, what about you?
I don't know.
Oh, did you have more questions, Justin?
No, I was just going to say, when my wife goes out of town, because she works as an actor, that's when I get out a puzzle that my daughters and I do. But we try to spread it out as long. I try to spread it out as long as possible.
We try to finish it before the ball drops. For them. So.
Yeah, throw pieces.
Also, my son and wife are crazy good at puzzles. So they're usually like done with it by the time me and my daughter have gotten to it. What about you, Pete? Any traditions?
Not nerdy ones, but yeah. I like the revving up for the old holiday fight that we have over what comics should be rated where, you know what I mean? It's a nice to get into yelling shape, you know what I mean? So I'm excited.
Oh, you're talking about our best of. Yes. I mean, I'll mention since we're talking around this. So we have our best of lists. We're going to be putting them together because of holidays. We are going to be skipping at least one, probably two live shows, I'm guessing, at the end of the year, but we're still going to put up episodes. One of them will be our best of the year that will go up. And then the other one will probably do like a movie TV preview or something like that. Like we did.
Yeah,
last
we're still
year.
Figuring it out.
Yeah, but there you go. But if you have any nominations, things that we should keep an eye out for best of the year, single comics or graphic novels, particularly those in our Discord, hit us up there. That's easy for me to track, or you can hit us up socially or elsewhere, and I will try to add those into the mix. Yeah. This is from The Greater Good 42. Not an audience question, but my wife is really enjoying Pete's tracker corner on the Week of Geek. Keep it up.
Wow. Hey, shout out to your wife, man. All right.
That's nice. This is clearly a CBS burner account.
CBS box, I will mention, and this made me feel crazy. I don't even know how this happened, but I get reports monthly from Google Analytics about our website and like what people are searching for. And one of the trending searches that was up last month was Tracker Season 2, Episode 6. And I was like, what?
On our site?
At our site. People were searching for it. Coming to our site.
I got the info. You let me know. Come on.
Yeah.
What the hell? Pete's been doing it very popular tracker coverage on our website secretly.
Shrekler says, what sports do you want to see a comic about?
Besides vampire football? I mean, jeez.
We really landed on something here.
Yeah.
I do always like it. I mean, this is not a good answer for what do I want to see, but what have I seen? I always like it when it's like, not a straightforward sport like a football or a baseball, but like, honestly, it's not my favorite comic, but Fence. I like the fact
you
that
do like, you like
no,
you
I don't. I don't love it. I feel like the writing.
You bring
like
it up. It.
I like it. And I like that it exists. I like things like that. Or like Screaming Painball over in, what was the Josie Campbell book? I love Heart Skull Crusher. I Heart Skull Crusher. Things like that, I think, are more fun for me when it's something like, oh, that's a little fun.
Well, and I think you can go with a big sport if you do something like Southern Bastards, something that I like to go read. And didn't it just get option for development in the last few months?
That was a fucked up story. Holy
shit. It was a fucked up story. It's also fucked up stuff that the artist did, but we don't need to talk about that.
That's right.
You're the one who brought that up.
That is right. How about curling? Let's see a curling comic.
Okay, man, that'd be fun.
I'm into it.
I love weird sports, so that would be fun. You know, ESPN the Ocho, you know what I'm saying? All about
what's
it.
What's your weird sport that you would watch or even play, Pete?
I do frisbee golf. I enjoy playing some frisbee golf. I don't know how weird that is.
There's your comic idea.
not a lot happens in frisbee. About vampire frisbee golf. Think about it, Pete. You should watch darts. Have you ever watched darts?
Oh, yeah,
professional darts. That shit gets crazy fast.
I used to, and back in the day, man, I used to be pretty good at darts.
All right, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah.
We got to get together, do some darts. Ross Gleck says DCKO has been getting a little hate because it was advertised as one-on-versus-one fights. It's my first event I've collected, so it's a little disappointing to me. How do you all feel about it? And I will say, potential spoilers, if you're not caught up with DCKO, it's in the issue 2. There's already been twists and turns. The second issue was about finding items more than the one-on-one fights. But I will say they're doing... This is all fight month. We're in
the middle of all
fight month, which is one versus one fights. Pete, that was just a little bit of background. You look like you were about to jump in.
Or barf.
I'm having a great time with the KO setup. I think it's like a fun idea. Yeah, I can see why some people be disappointed if they thought it was going to be like a big kind of thing. But I think it's cool because it's like, there are different battles and different comics that you're kind of like checking in on. So I don't know. So far I'm having a blast with it. I think they're doing, it's a cool idea. And yeah, I also think this kind of like dark seed evil that kind of is starting to eat characters is an interesting idea. So I'm interested to see how that's going to shake out. And if like the winner kind of turns evil or how that's going to work. But man, I've been having a blast with just kind of the whole giant battles and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think I like it. I do think they front-loaded a lot of exposition in sort of and twists in the beginning. So that might seem like it's off-putting or just a little heavy up top. But I do think this month is going to be the fights that everyone has been waiting for. So, like... I think ride it out for this month, I would say, Ross, and see what you think coming out the other side. Because I think it will all pay off. It's just they did it in an order we didn't expect, maybe.
This is from Easy Reader 7839. Do you guys have any books on your Christmas list? Well, I'm Jewish, so.
Yeah. Nice. Well, I did send you a Bible, Alex, so the original book.
I'm excited to crack that open. Find out what happens.
You
got to
check it out.
Seems like it'll be a good story, so we'll see.
Yeah, there's one thing people love is the story of the
movie. Art is not super tight bananas. Just no spoilers, but yeah.
Great cover.
Really thin great pages, cover. Too. Because it looks sort of thin as a book, but the pages are very, that's like napkins, like single-ply toilet paper.
Yes. I will say, not on my Christmas list, but I'm very idly long-term project planning on going back and rereading all of Stephen King's books, or at least the ones at the beginning, because I haven't read them in like 20 or 30 years at this point. I read The Running Man before the new Running Man came out, and I was like, all right, I love Stephen King. This is great. So I started reading Carrie the other day, his first book, and then I'm going to try to go through in chronological order.
Wow, like, in order. Well, look at order. You.
Once I that hit it crazy. In the stand, that's going to hold me up for like at least a year.
And are you going to do as much cocaine as he was doing? Yeah. I think he might be right. He wrote them faster than you can read them. I think.
Yeah, that's true. If I do cocaine, I'd be done now.
Yeah. That's a really true, and that's true of everything. That's true of any activity.
Hey kids, don't do cocaine
unless you want to go fast and be.
Unless you want to get it done, you know what I'm talking about. Finish that to do list. It's the end of the year.
Cocaine.
That's more true than I thought when I was.
I feel like it's going to bite you in the end. I don't recommend it.
Yeah, what's the one? I mean, there's probably a couple of them, but there's like one book that famously Stephen King does not remember writing.
Yes.
I feel like it was like Christine or Cujo, maybe?
I think it's Christine, the one where it's like, this is a book? And people still ride for Christine, the movie. That's the book where the car is evil.
Yeah, the evil car, yeah.
That seems like cocaine wrote most of that, so shouts to that. I need to finish a book I started and then put down as I got too busy, but The Bright Sword by Lev Grossman. So that is the book I'm going to finish reading that I enjoyed.
This question's great because I realized a Christmas tradition. Me and my niece go to a bookstore either the day after Christmas or the day before when I'm down visiting. So, I'm excited to check out some books and start reading.
You're going to love Goodnight Moon.
We actually, while we're talking about holiday traditions, we actually do the same thing. The last night of Hanukkah is pick your own book night. So instead of getting the kids a present for the last night of Hanukkah, we go to the local bookstore over here in Brooklyn, and they get to pick out whatever book that they want.
Stop stealing my ideas, man.
Yeah, we call it Papa Pete night.
Oh, that's nice. I celebrate Papa Pete night. It means something else in my house.
Capricorn Media Products says, ready for the upcoming trailer for Supergirl on Thursday. It feels too soon to be.
I agree. It feels like, how are we here now? Is it time for that?
What do you mean too soon?
I mean, this is my, probably has nothing to do with anything, but like my feeling is there's a lot of rumors that the Avengers Doomsday teaser trailer is going to hit with Avatar, Fire and Ash. So I think the Supergirl trailer is coming out now to get ahead of the Avengers Doomsday trailer would be my guess. But it's also like there's a lot of hype going into 2026 movies. We got the trailer for The Odyssey and tickets on sale a year in advance.
Well, I wouldn't call that a trailer, but yes, we did.
Yes, we got the trailer for the new Hunger Games movie coming out a year in advance. Seems like Avengers Doomsday a year in advance. So, like, I think, I don't know, movie companies clearly are like, oh, there's lots of great movies coming. Come check out our movies. So that's probably part of it. It may also have something to do with the Warner Brothers sale, just in terms of like being like, look at all these cool things that Warner Brothers has. But yikes. I don't know.
We'll no, they're not that savvy.
Maybe not. What do you think? Are you excited for the trailer?
Yeah, I'm excited. I mean, I love trailers. This movie especially, I feel like, has some tonal question marks that I think the trailer will at least set us on a path. So that's cool.
Yeah. Sometimes trailers can be misleading with the tone, but
I think they're going to be doing something. It's going to be doing something.
Mm-hmm. Eric MCI900 says, "When is the CBC Festivus episode?"
That's when we fight about comics. So
yes,
Every week.
Yeah. I think coming in 2 weeks. Really.
Zedman says, if you were to make another cameo in a comic, which would you like it to be?
Oh, man.
I mean, the real answer is Ice Cream Man.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one. That would be sick.
And we could slide right in. We could slide right in. And honestly, a lot of the characters, I feel like, oh, that is sort of me.
What? You sort of... torture and murder people?
No, the look, not the activities.
Oh.
But yes.
For me,
remember when Rodney said he would 100% be a serial killer if not for comics? Shouts to that.
Yeah. Is there
important to have outlets, people.
Is there any Christmas-themed comic books you like to read often, and why?
Mm.
I don't know about often, but when we get around to, I love, there's a Punisher Christmas comic that I like to revisit.
You know what was fun that, oh my gosh, what was the Null event, the one where Null took over the world, was King in Black. King in Black Hulk issue that was about Santa Claus, which sounds crazy, but was actually pretty great. That was a very fun issue.
That was strange. Whenever Santa Claus appears in continuity in the Marvel and DC universe, it's a little weird.
That actually reminded me, we're not getting a Batman Silent Night comic book this year, I don't think, which was a really fun treat the last 2 years.
The Parker...
Jeff Parker,
Jeff Parker written. I'm very surprised by that.
Yeah.
Because it would be coming out now.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Those were great, though. If you haven't checked them out, the first one, it's just like Justice League teaming up with Santa Claus, who's like... beefy warrior Santa Claus. Very fun. And the other one that this just comes to mind is Yuletide, which is coming out from Oni Press right now. It's a very fun, like, a kid's adventure fighting against Christmas monsters type thing. So, good stuff.
I mean, I love the anthology, the short anthology comics that come out where it's just a bunch of stories, like a giant-sized holiday comic from Marvel and DC. There's always just a banger story in those.
Okay, for real, which artist would you pick to illustrate the Bible?
Someone you really want to punish. Roberto Ramos. You really commit to the word. Really?
Oh, man, he does great art. I could watch him do anything.
Frank Cho.
Good. Really Liefeld? Good. Yeah. I'd love to see what Frank Cho would really do with a lot of
I want to see Jesus with a lot of pouches. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just like
no, I think you need Mark Bagley to just bang through. Give everyone I mean,
he
like,
already probably already did it. He heard
he's
it.
Halfway
he heard
done.
It and he's done.
Yeah.
Dan Mora, same thing. Dan Mora also did his own version of the Bible. Why are we talking about it?
Chris Bocciolo. Let's really add some frogs.
Yeah, dude. Come on. That would be unbelievable. Yeah. The Botch is a sick artist.
Ken Gordon says, I've not read much manga, any must reads.
Oh, there's tons.
Yeah, I'll mention I've been mildly obsessed with the Crunchyroll manga app. I've been reading through stuff on there.
Some, Lone Wolf and Cub.
They don't have that, but I did read, there's some very basic manga, like starter mangas, but Spy Family is great, very charming, very funny. I also read Delicious in Dungeon, which is pretty hilarious as well. It's about a group of adventurers who realize they could eat the stuff, monsters that are in the dungeon to keep themselves alive while they're in there. And there's one guy who's like, oh, we should really kill that monster, don't you think? Because he just wants to taste everything in the dungeon. Meanwhile, everybody else is on a mission, so it's very fun. And the one that I just started getting into, which I don't know, this is like very under the radar. I don't know if you guys heard it, is One Piece. Have you guys heard of that?
Yeah. You're getting into One Piece now.
I'm getting Holy. Into One Piece now.
Welcome to the club, bro.
Have you read it, Pete? Have you read
Oh, One yeah, Piece? Dude.
Okay.
You it, read it as well, Pete?
And I've seen a ton of episodes.
Wow. All right.
I went on a deep dive on One Piece a while ago.
I just don't know anything about it, and my son's obsessed with it, so I was like, all right, I'll give it a try. I don't know. I'm not going to read the whole thing, because that's insane. But it's much funnier than I thought it was going to be. Like, it's a very jokey...
Kids. The pirate goof?
The pirate yeah. goof is funny. Yeah,
it makes good. Sense. I mean, Death Note, you didn't say, but that's the one that I really got obsessed with years
Ooh.
Ago.
Yeah, Death Note is amazing. 20th Century Boys and Pluto are great as well.
Astro Boy.
Lots of stuff. Iron Walk Jan, of course. We all love that. Let's see. Stanley 2099 says, does Alex miss his beard? Will he regrow it?
Yeah.
Not really.
Not yet?
I don't know.
You
not
don't miss
yet.
It.
Not yet.
It's cold we'll out, see. Man.
It's all right.
You we'll Do you find that your beard really warms your face, Pete? I don't think yeah. that about what
It's like having a sweater.
I don't buy that.
Yeah, I'll see about my face sweater. We got a couple of other things here, and then we'll wrap up. So let's get through these. But Capricorn Media Products is... This is Pablo DiMartinez,
hey,
by the way.
Hey, Pablo wow. DiMartinez!
Undercover.
Yeah, Pablo. What do you think of WBD being owned by Netflix?
Well, not so fast, said another Paramount, corporation recently. Paramount launched a hostile bid that was massively more money, all cash. That the shareholders will be into, that is. So I think this is going to become a much longer fight than initially was between two companies that are generally considered bad for anyone right. that works in the entertainment industry and for anyone that likes to go see movies the way it's been for up until the last 5 years, I would say. So wow. definitely on the negative side, but... Mm-hmm. It's weird to be now rooting for Netflix because of Paramount feels and Skydance feels like a little more nefarious in their intentions, at least so far.
It's just crazy to me, and I know this is a very naive thing to say out loud, but it's crazy to me that Warner Brothers can't be its own company, like just exist on its own without being owned by someone. It's just wild.
Anyway. Well, the problem is it was... purchased by right. Discovery for and incurred a ton of debt, and then whatever cockamamie plan they had to pay off that debt just didn't materialize.
Right.
Not enough people followed the Discovery shows. The HBO subscribership, as far as I know, like was as expected, but people just didn't come over to sign up to watch you know, whatever Dr. Pimple Popper adjacent programming was on Discovery. And so they did
really
make
the
much
people
money.
That like Task weren't into Dr. Pimple Popper.
That's strange crazy. Marriage, but we contain two wolves, and one of them is Task, and one of them is Dr. Pimple Popper.
Pablo Nat says hi.
This is great. We're just bringing people together. Straight Bullet says, we talked about this in the Patreon, but I need name ideas for the comic book pub I'm working on. Right now, I'm liking Near Mint, but open to better suggestions, although Comic Book Pub is good, too.
A Comic Book Pub? What is happening?
Pete!
What?
Yes.
We've been talking about this.
Wait, there's going to be a pub? Wait, how does this work?
It's in New Orleans. It's what's going to get you to move there. You'll be either a regular or manager of this place in 1 year's time.
Either way sounds great.
I offered you up. I was like, you should call it Alex Papa did. Pete's, and then Pete's got to go down there.
But so is it a bar where, like, how are you reading comics in a bar? Like, do we have it like
Pete? You just said it. It's not a complicated formula.
But I'm just saying, do we have screens where we can read it so we don't worry about spilling beers? Because I'm really worried about the
bag and boarding. I mean, he's still working it out. Like, by the way, this is a serious thing that apparently he's like actually looking into.
Oh, my God.
The idea would be that there's a comic book shop and then there's a restaurant bar attached to it. So you can purchase your comics, walk over, sit down, eat a incredible burger made by Straight Bullet, drink a beer, and read your comics.
Oh, that's where would you need to have a little place where you can sleep in the back so that way you never have to leave.
No, where you can sleep in the back.
Yeah.
They make large cat beds, I believe, Pete. So you'll be
man.
Yeah, you got to really puff the fluff when you come in, and that means give Pete a hug. I think Near Mint is the name of your mojito cocktail at this unnamed bar. But Stray, I have not. I'm gonna conjure up a list and give it to you.
Stray says there's an arcade attached to the bar as well. This sounds like the greatest place ever invented.
Yeah. And Pete, for real, you should probably jockey to be the manager of the comic book portion. Move down to the
arcade. Like, either way. You know what I mean?
This is kind of your dream, right?
Yeah, exactly. Pete managing a comic book store arcade bar, he will die happy probably soon after he moves.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, we hired Pete. He moved down to New Orleans and
died happy.
We're in a bit of a bind, but
he's frozen in carbonite in the back of the bar. That's him right there.
You can still come visit him. If you listen close, you can still hear him yelling.
Beautiful.
Oh, that's great. You really should do that, though, Pete. 100% not a joke.
Like a banshee just about Frankencastle.
And we are going to move on with our next section, which is trivia. For that, we're going to turn it over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. It's an opportunity to win $25 free to Midtown Comics Online, because if you had $25, you want to go to a comic book shop. You know what I mean? Make your dreams come true. All we need is a first hand up or a volunteer.
Oh, we got Ross Collects coming in hot.
Nice.
With a Twitch level quick response. Stanley, Pete does have a cool Cajun vibe. I don't believe you, Stanley, but that is a nice thing to say.
Oh, man, that's fun.
All right, Ross Collects, you're going to get it. Take it away, Pete.
All right, today's trivia is about the comic Ultimate Wolverine and a small nod to the legend June Lockhart. R.I.P., Mom from Lassie. All right, please listen to all three options before making your selection. Here we go. Question number one. Who writes the comic Ultimate Wolverine? Is it A, Chris Condon? B, Spill the Tea, John? Who is Phil dating? C, John Phillips Dayton?
Wow. Sometimes it just falls into place.
Yeah.
Pete, how did it go when you worked on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Did they just give away too much money?
It was a real problem. I was hired and then fired. It was the quickest turnaround in history.
A? Is it A?
A is correct. All right.
Here we go. Question.
Question number two. What Earth is this ultimate universe set in? Is it A, Earth 6160? B, Knock It Off With All the Sexting? C, David Sexton?
Now, just to check, is his name spelled S-E-X-T-I-N-apostrophe, or how do you spell it?
It's
how I pronounce it, which I'm surprised you didn't pick up on. It's S-E-X-T-O-N.
Yeah, but P added a little flavor onto it.
A?
A is correct. Here we go. Last one. Don't overthink it. Question number three. What is the take on this version of Wolverine? Is it A, Winter Soldier Wolverine? B, Are You Even Real? See Adam Sims.
Pete, you should work at a carnival, just getting people's names and just playing around. Just
like, or an arcade slash bar slash comic book store, you tell me.
Yeah. A? Is it A?
A is correct. Yeah.
Great.
Congratulations,
$25
$25 to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email. We'll get that off to you. Pete, what is the secret movie you are referencing?
Of course, we're talking about the 1998 movie Lost in Space.
Yes. Wow. Nice. June Lockhart also in Lost in Space, not just The Mom and Lassie. Yeah.
And TV show. New comics come out.
That's right.
Wait, before we move on, like, Pete, it's very funny to me that your dream of working at Stray's Bar, but you applying and not having enough bartending experience to really get the job.
Oh, my God. That would
so I would just keep that in mind as you live the next
couple
years. Wait,
if you lived at bars and went there all the time, that's not enough bartending experience?
Pete, that's not bartending experience. That's bar attending experience.
What about when things went crazy and I had to jump behind the bar to help out? You know what I mean?
Show me a video of you jumping behind the bar and I'll believe every word out of your mouth. I look forward to seeing you hop the bar.
Before, you know.
Have you ever seen the movie Coyote Ugly? That's basically about Pete.
It was, yeah.
Yeah. The ugly part, yes, when he fell over the bar.
Fun fact, Coyote Ugly starts with someone selling their comic to pursue dreams. You know
that's
I mean?
Very true.
That's right.
Wow. True. You guys,
no, that actually
dropping.
Is true. Coyote Ugly is a comic book movie.
That's right.
Yep.
Yes, definitely. It'll
do you
be
know
playing
offhand,
at
because I don't, do you know offhand what comic it is? Because I feel like it's like Action Comics number one or something crazy like that.
It's the first appearance of the Punisher.
Oh my God, is it?
Is it really? Get out of here. Wow.
Is that
I will
true?
Say, I bet you've watched that movie.
I thought
a lot,
it was
Pete.
A Spider-Man comic, but I might be.
That's Punisher first appeared in a Spider-Man comic. So.
Could be.
If Pete comes to work at the comic book pub, he has to dance in the bar every night.
No problem. No problem. Be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Yes. Go up to the roof and Pete will be singing Can't Fight the Moonlight. I'm
excited. It's a great song, dude.
It is a great song. It's a great movie. Yeah. Nobody is arguing that Coyote Ugly is not a great movie because it is.
I don't know if that's 100%.
It is 100%.
John Goodman is fantastic in it.
He's great in it. Everybody's great. Piper Perabo?
Piper Perabo.
Wonderful cast. Wonderful cast.
Yep.
Anyway, as we all know, new comic books come out tomorrow. What are you guys looking forward to that's in comic book stores?
Oh, my God. There's so many great stuff coming out. I'm looking forward to the Infernal Hulk number 2.
Oh took man. One of mine.
I'm sorry, buddy. Ultimate Wolverine, I talked about it. But also Transformers number 27. And Crownsville number 2. Even before we had our guest on, I'm excited to talk about Crownsville.
Even before he wrote it down, it is technically after. I'm looking forward to, I'll hype 2 books, Assorted Crisis Events number 7. I'm fully in the Dennis camp, and this book has been absolutely heartbreaking.
You've been camping out for a while, bro.
It's getting cold out in the Dennis camp, but it is winter time. But this book, speaking of winter, has a bleakness to it. But each issue is surprising and finds a new way to tell a heartbreaking time travel-based science fiction story. So looking forward to that. And I also got to shout out Amazing Spider-Man number 17. It's crazy in a world where we have Ultimate Spider-Man that is an excellent book, also coming out tomorrow. But the Spider-Man book I'm more looking forward to is Joe Kelly's Spider-Man. He has surpassed Ultimate
Great
Spider-Man
writer.
In my mind. That book of alternating between what's happening on Earth and what's happening with Peter Parker in space has been really interesting and hitting all the marks.
I'll reiterate a couple of things you guys said. If Assorted Crisis Events is always a must read. Excited about the All Fight Month stuff that's coming out. And I'm pretty hyped for The Darkness number 1. Just, I don't know. I can't
really?
Explain it.
Oh, wow.
But I like The Darkness. I'm excited to see what they do with it. The Witchblade reboot was real good.
It was
so good. I don't know. We'll see about this. We'll see if that matches up to it. But it should be fun.
Tune into the stack to find out.
One other thing I would say is Miss Truesdale and the Rise of Man number 1.
Oh,
Red Drome and Jesse Lonergan is doing the art on this, written by Mike Mignola. So definitely going to check that out.
Yeah. And one last thing to leave you guys with that I will bring up here, if you don't mind. What can you hear that?
No.
No, but we can see it.
Is that the trailer for Supergirl? Oh, it's Coyote Ugly. It is the first appearance of Punisher.
It's the first appearance of the Punisher.
I can't believe you knew that. That's fucked up.
I mean, come on. Come on, of course I'm going to... All I need to do is see that once.
Wait, did she have the book?
Yeah.
She got the first appearance
of the book. It's a beautiful story. Yeah. He sells it for her, but then she goes and gets it. Oh, it's just... Oh.
That is the most peak-coded situation I could ever imagine in a movie. This feels crazy.
It's my dream. It's
Stanley 299, Pete's always right. Careful how you say that. Stanley, I pray you don't live your life that way. Be careful. Tread lightly.
In any case, as Pete mentioned, all of those books that we mentioned are going to be in our Stack podcast that comes out in the Stack feed of the Comic Book Club feed Wednesday at 9 a.m. And folks, that is it for this week's show. A couple of people we want to thank. We want to thank Kenny Porter and Mike Becker for coming on to talk about the new Space Age that is coming out December 17th from Mad Cave Studios. Also, Rodney Barnes for coming back to talk about Crownsville. Issue number 2 is on sale tomorrow from Oni Press. You can check that out, and that book is awesome as well. Next week, we are going to have Jason Spisak is going to be on the show, and if you don't know who that is the voice of Batman in Batman. High Volume. So we're going to have Batman himself on the show.
Nice. We talked to a couple other actors from that show, Alex, when you were not here, and it was a blast.
Yes, so very excited to have him on. Also, Comic Book Club News, our daily news show, Monday through Friday, every day of the week. Patreon.com/comicbookclub for ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Android, Spotify, or wherever you get podcasts. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club. Smash that like button.
Follow your Coyote Ugly dream.